Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com. Amazon and select retailers nationwide.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
You want to come and join with you?
I'm gonna make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk!
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do!
I'm the Joker, baby!
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Bars, episode 112 of season 2. Jeff D'Lo, Ken Jack, Gooch, and Chris Castellani joining you here talking Transformers, Rise of the Beasts, a sequel to Bumblebee, and none of the others. Fun fact, it's not in the same universe, for those wondering. I saw you tweeting about that yesterday, Gooch.
Well, Robbie had a question about it, and I answered it to the best of my ability.
Yeah, it's a little confusing because the music is the same. They brought in Steve Jablonski to bring back that great score, which is a great score, by the way. I love the theme for Transformers.
Mm-hmm. Not the score, but the soundtrack was missing one thing.
Linkin Park.
It was. It missed it.
Yeah, there's a big thing reason why they can't do that.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Chester.
So we'll be talking about that. We also have an interview with what's the order of the interviews here? Who do we?
We have a lot. We've been doing so many interviews.
Who do we have in the last? We had Anthony Ramos on last week, who's in this movie.
Yes.
So I believe we have Christopher Mintz-Plasse and Michael Cera.
Yes.
So that's what we have today. We have those two interviews. We have a backlog. We have Sam Hargrave, who directed Extraction, now Extraction 2. We have him next week. We'll air that after Extraction 2 comes out because we do reference some stuff in the movie.
We're doing Sarah tomorrow and then Stewie.
Yeah, we do.
On Wednesday.
From Succession. Yeah, we have him on. It's just going to be Seth MacFarlane doing Stewie the entire time. that's it.
You woman.
So from Succession. So we'll talk Succession a few weeks after it wraps. But yeah, today we've done how many interviews? Like 200 interviews probably plus.
Yeah.
And we had Christopher Mintz-Plasse and Michael Cera back to back.
It's fucking crazy.
Seems insane. Who Gooch, what'd you call me? what'd you call me the other day?
I can't remember what it
we
was.
We had a good moment. We were in Chicago and I was leaving to go to the theater. We were doing the live dozen at, and he goes, hey, make sure to send me. He's like, you accidentally sent me. I meant to send him the Anthony Ramos interview. He goes, you sent me Platts by accident. I go, Platts.
Chris Platts.
I'm like, I sent you the Ben Platt interview from like 2 years ago.
I was like,
what? I go, I'm a fucking idiot. And then I looked, I was like, wait a second. I said, no, I sent you an interview from yesterday. And that's, the Platts interview. We were confused for a good 15, 20
that's
seconds.
That's just how they say it in Kentucky, man. You know who I was talking about.
Chris Platt.
Chris Mintz-Plasse.
he was fun. He was a good interview, and we're talking. We haven't talked to Michael Cera yet. I'll be talking to him this week. So yeah, we have those two interviews, the two from Superbad. Mm-hmm. It's the Superbad reunion show. It's the mid to late 2000s episode. This episode.
So I'm trying to think if everyone
Transformers is back.
Should we do one?
I mean, Transformers Rise of the Beast, which is not. This is not a knock on it. I did text Kenjack. I said this movie has big time LCB 90s episode vibes. There's a lot of like, hey, you need to know when this takes place. Mm-hmm. As if the World Trade Center, the opening shot wasn't enough.
I mean, I told you what I laughed audibly in the theater once they panned up and I can't remember, they were at like a supermarket or he was going to his interview.
Yeah.
And for some reason, the guy. the guy sitting at the front desk was watching the OJ trial.
He was watching the chase. It was the Bronco chase. Yeah, it was a very distinct moment. Yeah. Crazy shit happened in the Transformers world on that day in history. Unbelievable. So we'll talk about that. Not a ton of news to get to off the top. Let me pull up the old rundown here really quick. A couple things. We got some video game news tied to two massive franchises, though, which we will talk about. But first up, we will discuss the Witcher trailer. Part one of season three of The Witcher hits Netflix on June 29th. Ken Jack as the lead Witcher boy.
I'm the lead Witcher boy in that of the video game world. This is based on the books, which is definitely more Gooch's area. I haven't read the books, but I will say it's weird to watch this trailer almost in the same way it's weird to like have to watch some of the dying DC projects, because like Henry Cavill's leaving after this season. It's going to be done with Liam Hemsworth. No disrespect to our good boy Chris or Liam, but like it's dead after that. So it's weird to watch like a trailer for what is the last season with Henry Cavill. And Henry Cavill, I feel like, is pretty clearly leaving because of the creative differences he has as a big Witcher fan with the people who are making The Witcher, who have been deviating a lot from the books. So that part of it's weird, but like I'll always watch some Henry Cavill as Witcher, man. He's really good as Geralt. He's a great Geralt. And just like hearing more about like how he clashed with some of the people about like making shit more canon. Like what was that bit he said? Like, I didn't want to have sex with a fucking, what's her name?
Which is a weird comment to make because in the books,
very sexual.
They fuck all the time.
Yeah. He's like, they're having a more of an emotional connection. I don't want to fuck as much. That's weird. I mean, but I'll always sign up to watch more of Henry Cavill.
Yeah, no, I think it looks great. Like you said, I think Henry Cavill's fantastic as Geralt. I mean, that's exactly what I imagined when I read the books. I do wish, you know, like retroactively looking back, I wish HBO or someone else had gotten the rights to this. Yeah.
Dude, Netflix, they made like 20 offshoots already and they all suck.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, let's focus on making a quality product first. Like, build the foundation before you start building up the rest of the house. Like, I don't. This is the final season, like you said. Like I don't know what they're thinking with the Liam. I doubt it even gets off the ground. I mean, the response from fans and like even just passerbys, like no one is interested in watching Liam Hemsworth step into the role. So who knows?
Mm-hmm. Speaking of DC stuff, pretty funny. Michael Shannon's quote about The Flash. Basically said like it was not quite as satisfying coming back and playing. I almost said Grodd, which is a variation of the large pig that they – or the large wolf they knocked down.
From Lord of the Rings, yeah.
Yeah. Grond,
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. That he plays Zod, and he said it was not quite as – and he made a good point. He's like, it's these multiverse. It's like, you know, you pick up an action figure, pick up a character, and it's a he fights him, he fights him, she fights him. So where it's, you know, you get more into the character of Man of Steel, which I'm not a big Man of Steel person myself. I don't love it, but he's not wrong. Like I get that. Mm-hmm. Like I kind of love the idea of like this just artist of the craft, Michael Shannon on set. And they're like, hey, this is where you might be. And this is where fucking, this is where we're going to CGI, I guess, bleep that out. I guess that's a spoiler for some who don't know. So we're going to CGI old, like past dead actors and stuff.
Yeah.
I heard they CGI live actors a couple times.
Yeah. There's some wild shit with this movie, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Some real wacky, zany things.
We lost Chris.
Chris apparently has what can only be described as unbelievably, epically bad internet.
Yeah.
Apparently he's had a nightmare 24 hours. So I figure we probably lose him at some point here.
Yeah.
Speaking of Netflix, experienced their largest growth in 4 years after starting their password sharing purge, which apparently is hitting the hardest in the United States. Apparently that is where it's has not impacted me.
Sir, the Netflix password sharing is hit another account.
Have you been notified yet?
I got the notification, but it hasn't taken me off.
I haven't gotten the notification at all.
I pay for Netflix. I haven't used mine in weeks. Like there's two other accounts that I routinely use, family account and someone else, and I haven't used my own.
Wait,
I haven't gotten any notification.
Wait, Jeff, you have three Netflix accounts?
No, I have I have somebody who logged into mine and my Apple TV at home. I'm just not going to log out of mine. I use mine on my computer and when on my phone and I'm traveling and stuff, but like I haven't used Netflix except for at home. And then I have another one. It's like my parents log in.
You're their number one enemy.
I know. I still pay for it, though.
I still have my mom's. I have my mom's Netflix account, and it just has never changed. I don't want to have to, even though with T-Mobile, I'm pretty sure I get a free year. Shout out T-Mobile.
Like, I'm watching Supernatural on someone's account. There's 15 fucking seasons of that show. To go through 15 seasons of Supernatural on another Netflix account, I don't remember where I left off.
Mm. Yeah, no, I mean, this is...
I don't want to log back in.
Enjoy your blood money, Netflix.
Yeah, I know.
I just don't believe anything they say at this point.
Oh, they're the biggest liars in the world other than Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
It's an unbelievable black box.
Yeah.
Also, shout out to the XFL, lost $60 million, apparently.
I think they were always going to lose money no matter what, but like the question is, will they make money later?
Wasn't The Rock invested in that?
Yeah, that's his
thing. The XFL, it's his thing.
He also could be lying. They might have lost
he took a He took a steamy dump on Forbes yesterday. I actually kind of gave the XFL a little credit. I said, I think it's easy to shit on the XFL like I just did 5 seconds ago, but... I do think it's like a vibe. Like they have up to 100 players that are going to be in camp this year for the NFL. I do think, like, if the NFL wants to work with them properly, and somebody did note to me, which I guess I either forgot or wasn't aware of, the NFL is collaborating with the XFL to adopt like some rules. So I do think it could be a viable. Like I don't think it's. I think it's funny to make fun of the XFL and do it, but like I will give The Rock credit. Like they're staying their course. It apparently went well the first season. Like they're paying attention to building the brand of the players and making it a pipeline. If that's their goal, then you know, whatever.
Adopt the helmet cams. Or was that USFL? I don't remember. One of them had helmet cams and it was very cool.
I think USFL might have done that. Yeah. The XFL might have done that as well. XFL's some good. They got a couple. Shit, yeah. They do a nice job. I don't watch.
Yeah.
I think I will. I'll go on the website, see how many touchdowns Ben DiNucci threw last week.
Ben DiNucci, wow.
I think he's the leading passer of the XFL.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Wait, now the stat sheet's going to be so weird.
I think
some names from college.
I think Ben DiNucci plays for like the Seattle Sea Dragons or something with Josh Gordon.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Imagine if like they just lead.
Who threw the most touchdown passes in the XFL this year?
It is A.J. McCarron. A.J. McCarron, then Ben DiNucci.
Okay.
And I don't recognize another name all the way down this list.
Until Paxton Lynch. You, A.J. McCarron, but both our franchises were so incompetent.
Yeah, they couldn't use the fax machine.
Yeah.
Both our franchises were so incompetent we couldn't get the trade done.
They couldn't. Yeah, like
forgot to do the paperwork.
Yeah, like there was like a fax issue. Unbelievable.
Trying to find more names. The only ones I get at Paxton Lynch.
You guys were trying to give us like a first rounder for him, too. Like first or second.
Oh, it would have been like an all-time bad fucking trade.
Steven Montez. He was on Green Bay, right? I think for a bit.
Sounds familiar, but I don't know. But yeah, I knew DiNucci. I forgot McCarron was up there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Next up. Chris, have you gotten booted off a Netflix account yet? That's what we were talking about.
No. Booted out of everything else because my internet is run by a fucking hamster.
Yeah, I prep the audience that your internet is bad. Yeah, I mean inside of our own office, the internet's bad sometimes, which is hilarious.
Caleb Vander Esch, one of the leading receivers. I mean, that has to be his brother, right?
It has to be.
Yeah.
You can't have that many guys with those wacky names in there. Two new games that we got to get a look at here. Star Wars. Outlaws game is set in between Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, releasing later this year. It seems like we're in a bit of a Star Wars game renaissance here.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
The Fallen Jedi stuff's been awesome. It's just like you watch the trailer for this one and it's it's so hard to make hype for an open world Star Wars game. Cause it's like you really need it to be truly, truly large in scale, massive and open world. And like that concept plus Underworld, like you think, at least in my head, this has to be like Red Dead-ish. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you have all the imagination, everything you need in the world to make it like a Red Dead with the absence of Rockstar and their great designers that only work once every four fucking years. But like that should be the bar. And I doubt it hits anywhere close to that. But like I'm excited just based on the concept. Trailers, whatever. It's impossible to tell off cutscenes. But like I want to be excited for it.
We're around the time of the year. It just came out where like the new Madden trailer comes out, but it's all like cinematic footage, and you're like, okay.
Oh, that Patrick Mahomes throw was truly ridiculous.
we'll see how that is. Yeah, no, I mean that's cool. And then also the Avatar game they released today. They released the first look at the new Avatar game, which comes out on Pearl Harbor.
No, December something.
Was that wrong? Okay. No, Ken Jack said he said December 7th because that might not be right. But honestly, it's like I could still see them releasing something on Pearl. Like If that's the day it falls on, like, the typical release day in a week.
James Cameron, Canadian, doesn't care. You have a care in the world
doesn't
about it.
Care.
Yeah.
You, but you were, when I walked in, you were watching the trailer, Gooch, and you said you didn't love the way it looked.
It looks terrible. It looks awful.
December 7th, yeah, it was. I was right.
Wouldn't that be an unfucking real way for James Cameron to be like, hey, people are liking my stuff. I want it to be culturally relevant. I want nothing to be as good as the movies. He's like, make a bad game.
I can't imagine he was involved at all because the graphics look terrible. He's such a perfectionist that I don't think he'd ever allow something like that to be released.
Sold the rights.
It's the same thing with the open world Star Wars game where I think if you're going to do Avatar, you have to make it truly open world and explorable. Yeah. Like, I'm not interested in the action's fun in the Avatar movies, but what truly captivates you is the world building and like the environment. So if you're not going to like spend the money on making the graphics super like realistic and the world super explorable, then I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
I'll just wait for the next movie. Sully stick together.
They do. Yeah.
I do think it's interesting though. I wonder if either of these games will be canon.
I doubt it.
No, Star Wars, right. Star Wars. Yes. They don't
they have
make
a better chance.
They don't Star Wars. They don't make things that are non canon except for Visions, but Visions is a weird, like they made it very clear. Like if this was non canon, I think we'd know about it already.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would respect more franchises, especially like big IPs, like starting to make their video games canon. I mean, they don't have to be direct line stories. Like obviously in the Spider-Man games, it's hard to say, oh yeah, this is canon to the Spider-Man story, but stuff like Star Wars, like stories that just won't come into live action. Why not?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just saw something funny, by the way. And apparently in Andor, that big funeral scene, she was supposed to say, or somebody was supposed to say, fuck the Empire.
She was.
And Disney, and Disney wouldn't let Tony Gilroy do it.
I think I think that was fine.
It's supposed to be the spark of the rebellion was that dude saying, fuck the Empire.
I kind of like it better the way it is.
Yeah, it's more elegant that way.
Yeah.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Fuck 'em. Illumination. Behind some of the worst animated movies ever made, and The Minions.
And some of the best.
And some okay. Some of the
Despicable
best.
Despicable Me. Despicable Me. I wouldn't put it like...
The list of Illumination movies is... It's ugly.
Super Mario Brothers movie.
Still tracking well. It's crazy.
It is. Yeah, it is. It's doing nuts. But they want to do another movie in the video game universe. The Legend of Zelda. I think you'd get a much less forgiving reaction than Mario.
Really? Oh my god. Yeah, dude, people gatekeep Zelda so much.
Yeah, Zelda heads. They went crazy about the new game, right?
Yeah, of course.
People
they
were
did.
Furious about something with it. I don't follow it closely, but I do know that the fandom is nuts.
They get way more mad.
Link is a little femboy.
I mean, it's true.
That's my headcanon.
Fucking, they go nuts with that. They're going, like, I think they're mad about, they're mad about the new one. I don't know what for. I know Trove Ballins liked it a lot for whatever that's worth, and he's probably the biggest.
I think a lot of people liked it, right?
Wait, people are mad about it? I saw it being called the game of the year.
You get every like, spectrum of the reaction from, I guess, canon heads of Zelda or whatever. Not enough Ganondorf or some shit. One of my my go-to character on Smash, by the way, Ganondorf. He fucking rocks.
That was always a Ness.
Oh, Ness stunk.
He's so cool.
That stupid attacks. I fucking hated that bastard. I hated anyone that played with Mewtwo as well.
Jigglypuff.
Jigglypuff was better because you put people to sleep with him. That makes more sense.
Happy Pride, brother.
Best player in the best Smash player in the world plays a Jigglypuff, I believe.
Yeah, no, Jigglypuff I've heard is like kind of a hack, but I'm not picking that when I'm hanging out with my friends in the basement.
I was always Pikachu because the stadium, N64 for the stadium came out when Pokemon was like the shit. Pokemon was everything, and so to play with Pikachu was...
His, like, self-attack with the lightning bolt was fucking deadly.
I liked playing with the Fantastic Mr. Fox.
You mean...
Star Fox.
Star Fox?
A Wes Anderson-themed brawl would be very funny. He's hysterical.
There's fucking Steve Zissou.
Yeah, Reef Fiennes versus Steve Zissou.
Dude, I can't beat Gooch. He's always... Like, he's got the Life Aquatic back.
Yeah. Now I'm going to have to Photoshop that the second. Holy shit. And you could do those, like,
I never gets Ben Stiller in his little jumpsuit.
Yeah.
The Frances McDormand characters are so tough to beat.
It's like those fucking intro songs, like, Ben Tannenbaum. Fuck, to make this now is going to be so fun. God, I love those games.
the Bob Balaban. Just unbelievable. We are talking about that movie next week. Mm-hmm. A big week of movies this week. Big weekend of movies this weekend. You got Extraction, The Flash, and that other
the fucking Asteroid City. There we go.
Which, by the way, Asteroid City commercials. I don't know if you guys have seen these. The reviews are at like 68% around Tomatoes. They're not, or 75, I think. It's early, but it's like, it's okay. It's nothing mind blowing. But the commercial has so many 5-star reviews in it that I actually second guessed this morning and I went, wait a second. Is this movie like up there? And it's not.
No.
It's kind of middle of the road.
Wait, have you seen it?
No.
Oh, okay.
Just in the commercials.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Plimpton.
People thought you went and saw Mission Impossible last night.
You set yourself up for that.
I almost let him believe it.
You should have.
You put yourself in a fucking theater and sent a picture of Tom Cruise.
You should have replied with it.
Everyone's going to think
just that. Just at C. McQuarrie, like, thanks, bud, or something like
that. I'll do that. I'll do that for Oppenheimer. When we go to the theaters next time. Next time I get the Oppenheimer trailer, I'll be like, thanks, Chris.
First trailer for Poor Things, starring Emma Stone, Willem Dafoe, and Nicholas Holt. It's from Yorgos Lanthimos, mm-hmm. who did The Favorite.
Beast.
Has there ever been any film director that sounds more like a Harry Potter character?
Do you remember when people thought he was gonna win the fucking Oscar because some kid like knew his like dad knew Yorgos Lanthimos or something and thought he won the Oscar? You remember that?
No.
Back when, and it's for the sake of covering my ass, you can't bet on the Oscars in every state, depending on where you have the Barstool Sportsbook. But back, this was years ago, I think before, you know, the big boom of legalized sports betting, the odds on Yorgos Lanthimos like shot up in the 10 hours for, and it was some kid at Penn State, like his dad works for like whatever studio released The Favorite. And it was like, yep, he's going to win Best Director. It's going to happen. And it moved. Because I remember our coworker, Marty, and if you know Marty, this is a crazy thing for Marty Mush to come over. He's like, hey, are you going to bet on Yorgos Lanthimos? I was like, what the fuck are you? Like, why are you telling me that right now?
I can't imagine Mush trying to pronounce Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yeah, you find it?
Yeah.
Crazy,
he
right?
Went from 45-1 to 5-1. And then it took him off the board.
Yeah, it was the craziest, like... Yeah.
Oh, God damn it.
He does have a Harry Potter ass name,
that
though.
Rat fuck.
So, brought back to life by an unorthodox scientist, a young woman runs off with a lawyer on a whirlwind adventure across the continents. Free from the prejudices of her times, she grows steadfast in her pursuit and in her purpose to stand for equality and liberation.
Comes Sexy out Frankenstein.
September 8th, 2023, this fall. Sexy Frankenstein, yeah. And Emma Stone, Willem Dafoe, Rami Youssef, Margaret Qualley, Mark Ruffalo. Chris Abbott, Gerard Carmichael,
Tom Holland.
A lot of people in it. Has anyone watched the Tom Holland thing yet? Is that out yet?
Oh, it is.
He's never going to act again. he's taking a year off.
Took a whole fucking year off because it was so hard to shoot and everyone is panning it.
Thoughts on the trailer? Sorry, you Ken Jack?
That looks cool. I mean, we talked about it a bit last week. Like, it's just fucking, it's a great cast, great director. You're going to get a lot of fisheye lens because that's what Yorgi does. And I feel like it's going to be great. The visual guide Yorgi. Or whatever.
I like that.
Yeah, Yorgi's a great nickname for him.
That's a great nickname.
Yeah. The visuals of it look fucking crazy. I can't wait to see
Chris,
it.
Are you all Yorgos'd up after this?
I really like The Favorite. Mm-hmm. And I love Emma Stone. I'm glad to see Emma Stone back in movies. I feel like she's been out for a minute. I feel like Cruella was like the last big thing she did. So, I mean, it's his style, meaning it'll be weird as shit. But he has a way of, I don't know, he seems to have a way of making very entertaining movies that like you wouldn't think would be entertaining.
Yeah.
Like, I thought The Favorite would be totally dry and boring. And it was just a giant soap opera about a few crazy bitches. I like that. So hopefully we could get more of the same with someone.
That is her last feature movie is Cruella. And before that was Croods: A New Age. Before that, great Zombieland movie. Double Tap.
But she took a break.
Okay. Yeah, she really did. Yeah, that is.
Yeah, she had a kid. I think she had a kid.
Yeah, she got married and had a kid. Wanted to do that for a little while.
Makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's I'm looking forward to it. You're right, because the that's a good way to describe it. Is because The Favorite for me, like that type of period shit, is I hate that. I hate that.
I usually do too, but I really like
that. Yeah, The Favorite's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Mark
Ruffalo, by the way, in that trailer, he looks incredibly out of place, right?
Yeah, you said that the other day.
Yeah. I'm getting this narrative going.
We debated a little bit. Is Mark Ruffalo a good actor?
I think he is. I think we haven't seen him in a ton of
The best he has is what, Spotlight? And was that
which is very good. I think he's very good in Spotlight.
Was that a massive challenge of a role? The more I think about it.
He played it. It's a weird character. He had like weird quirks and stuff.
He just kind of like talked fast and was just like, you know, has he been in a ton of good stuff? Those boys.
Has he been in a ton of good stuff lately? I don't know.
The Foxcatcher.
Foxcatcher.
But like, I'm trying to run through the gamut of every single
13 going on 30.
Yeah, that's not maybe the best.
It's like he's good at that.
Like Zodiac, like he's barely.
He's not a lead.
He's not a lead in Zodiac though.
I'm trying to think. He's pretty fucking good at Zodiac.
I'm trying to think of a movie where he's a lead. And he's very good. It's tougher to
get something good. What was that? Oh yeah, now
very
you see
tough,
tough
to think of one.
I hate.
The Kids Are All Right. He was really good.
If that's the example you need to run to, I think you're in rough shape.
Steve movie.
I hate the Now You See Me movie so much.
It was so bad.
I like the first one.
I like the first one there, actually.
Oh, yeah. Sheep!
I thought you were only talking about the second one.
The
second one's really bad.
Listen, that was entertaining.
I thought so too.
They're twisting the second one. So bad.
Fuck that.
It's just like the first one, it just towed the line so much on suspension of disbelief where it just kind of ruined it for me.
Dude, when they throws the card, what is Dave Frank? Is that the second one?
Isn't that the second one?
I'm getting them melded in my mind, but wait, which one's the one where they throw the card? Because that's the most ridiculous.
That's the second one.
That is one of the most ridiculous.
That's the second one.
That's one of the most ridiculous scenes I've ever seen.
Who's it? And then like Lizzie Kaplan in it.
It's like her.
Yeah, she was in
Eisenberg
the second
and I don't know.
Oh my god.
Weird crew.
Woody Harrelson.
Yeah, he is in fact.
Twin shows up in the second one.
Dan. The second one's got. That's the one with Daniel Radcliffe.
Yes.
So bad. He's the evil man.
He's the son of Michael Caine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so that's the news. I don't think of anything else.
You guys watch Flamin' Hot. I don't think we're going
to
review it.
That's what I'm going to get to next. So we did – Ken, Jack, and I saw Flamin' Hot on YouTube, on Hulu. We pirated it on YouTube. On Hulu, it is about the creation of the Flamin' Hot Cheetos, the Flamin' Hot brand. Directed by Eva Longoria. It's nothing groundbreaking, but I think it's – where would you put it, in the 80s? Maybe it's low 80s for me. It's like
I'd say like 70s.
Really enjoyable – biopic brand by it's not as good as Blackberry is fucking awesome, but like it's very enjoyable. Little some tear jerky moments.
Yeah,
it's got a couple emotional scenes, and I will say the story is a nice story, and they infuse it with a lot of like good Mexican heritage and culture too, where like there's a personality to it.
Yeah,
part of the problem with like I think the founders, the example I always use, the founders tough for two reasons. One, because Ray Kroc was a dick. Like, so they're just, you just really aren't, you don't want to root for the main character of the founder. He's an asshole. But there's just not a lot of, and I like Keaton in it, but there's just something that's so bland about the founder. Mm. Where this one, they have a couple like dream sequency things that are fun, and it really keeps kind of, it makes sure to really hammer home Mexican culture and heritage, and it has a personality, and it's nice. It's touching. I like Flamin' Hot.
Mm. Yeah. I think any brand movie, it needs like a certain level of like earnestness. So it's not just like, hey, here's Frito-Lay, come suck my dick or something. Like, you know what I mean? Like, come buy my products. Like this, it has like a level of earnestness, which is cool. Character, the guy who played Montañez was pretty good, I thought.
Yeah, he's very good.
That's worth a lot of personality. It's fun. It's got some humor. There's worse ways to spend however long the runtime was on it.
Also a surprise Shalhoub.
Yeah, Shalhoub as a good old boy, a Ginzo. I was pretty cool. I didn't expect it.
Yeah, they're
classic Italian Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah, if you're looking for some more Shalhoub content, Flamin' Hot on Hulu.
And some Enrico something or something Enrico, I forget.
Richard Enrico.
Yeah. Oh man, and I hit you guys with it. It didn't make me want to buy any Frito-Lay stuff, but it made me want to drink Pepsi, which is worse.
Pepsi is rebranding, by the way, their logo for the fall.
To what?
It fucking rules. The new, just look at the new Pepsi logo. Great rebrand. Classic, just a
nice.
Yeah. There, Pepsi's.
Hell yeah!
I'm a Coca-Cola guy. Pepsi's new cans are kind of sexy. They got a great look to them.
It's nice. They went back to the old school. Their minimalist logo.
Have you ever seen the brand breakdown for the old Pepsi? It's unfucking believable. The company that Pepsi hired to make that. The logo where it's like the red and it's kind of like the small white and it expands.
Yeah, this one.
It's right. Like the new one that you see on Pepsi cans. It is unreal. Like it's tied to like Da Vinci and
get the fuck out of here.
it's like the planes of
airline.
It's like the planes of existence. It is fucking crazy. It is crazy.
Looks like the fucking United logo. It sucks.
All right. So that's news.
Stella Blue Coffee's new can lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations, so when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today, taste the difference, and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee canned lattes now available at StellaBlueCoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.
Two interviews. We got Christopher Mintz-Plasse and we got Michael Cera, the Super Bad Boys.
Are you okay?
Yeah, that one snuck up on me.
Oh, the way you held your hand there, I thought you were about to have a big
boogie.
Ball of snot in your
boogie
hand.
About to come out.
All right, we talked to Chris Mintz, as everyone calls
Prince
him. Here
Platt.
We go.
Dude, I like your backdrop. It's just like an ominous red door.
Yeah, it's like in a horror movie.
Yeah, okay, so when they designed it, it was supposed to look like you're sitting in a really cool like phone booth in London. Booth.
Yeah.
But it really, it doesn't.
Well, when you move away, it takes away from the mystery, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, like it right there.
All right, we'll do. We can say it's a formal start. But Christopher Mintz-Plasse, thanks for joining us for the first time on our podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
I don't know what part of that we'll leave in, but if we didn't leave in the part where you said this is your last press interview for this show, Stars on Mars, which is already out airing on Fox Mondays at 8. New reality show follows a simulation of what it might be like to be an astronaut on Mars with celebrities competing to be last one standing. Ariel Winter, Natasha Leggero, you're in it, obviously. Otherwise, it'd be weird that we'd be talking to you about it. Ronda Rousey, Lance Armstrong, Tom Schwartz, who is, I assume this had to be filmed before all of his drama with his own other reality show, Vanderpump Rules. Marshawn Lynch, Porsche Williams, another reality legend, Richard Sherman. This has to be one of the most over-the-top insane things that you've done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. I mean, like, there's legends of the athletic championship world in this show, which is so surreal. Like, I did know that Marshawn and Richard Sherman were going to be on the show when I joined, but they wanted to keep a couple people private. And when we got there and the doors opened up and Lance Armstrong walked in, I was like, what the fuck is this thing? I was like, why does he need to be here right now? Like, he doesn't need money. He doesn't need clout. I was like, so confused. But yeah, it was outrageous, man. Outrageous.
Are you allowed to tell us where it was? How it came to be like on set, like how they did it all.
Yeah, of course. I mean, well, we shot down in Australia in a place called Coober Pedy, which is a opal mining town, the population of 2,000 people. And they all sleep actually underground because in summer it gets like 120, 130 degrees. And they can't live on top. And then like they just built this massive fucking space set where they put like millions of dollars into this thing. I hope the show is a success because Fox put a lot of money into this thing. So I hope they get it back. But yeah, it was just chaos, man. We were living in the middle of the outback, you know. They would drive us like an hour and a half out to do some crazy mission that they would build in the middle of buttfuck nowhere. And then we would go back and I would be bunking with Tom Schwartz and Lance Armstrong. It was surreal.
It's goddamn crazy. Reality show versus, or let's say, a movie or a TV show. What's more fun for you to film, or what's one of those drives you crazier on a set?
This shit was one of the hardest things I had to do mentally, because, you know, on set for a TV show or a movie, you're hiding behind a character, you're hiding behind dialogue. You get to like shoot for 10 minutes and then you have 20 minutes off. Whereas here, you're going in and you're being filmed 24/7, 60 cameras at all times. I've never done something like this before. You literally go to bed, you pull your shade down, you take your microphone off, and then you're like up at 5 a.m. And they're like, Christopher, put your mic on. And you're like, haven't taken your morning shit, your cup of coffee or anything. And you're just like being filmed. It was honestly like there were moments that were really fun, but mentally I kind of put a really like hard strain on myself because – you know, the couple of the producers were like, you're the funny guy. You and Natasha, you're the funny people. Oh. Be funny. And I was like, all right, already, like, you want me to, like, create content. So my brain is like, where is that something I could do? Is that something that can be funny? Is that good content? And in reality, like, the emotions of living a full day, I'm sure you guys know, like, there's stress, there's excitement. Then you get tired. Then you miss your family. Then you get excited again. So you have to, like, do all of that while maneuvering being filmed 24/7. It was very fucking intense, honestly.
I like the idea of like a TMZ headline that comes out, Chris Turman's boss doesn't realize he's being filmed, gets caught beating off 52 times.
Doesn't realize
without his microphone
being filmed. Yeah.
I didn't even think about that. That you and Natasha Leggero were definitely, you get pigeonholed into being the funny people. That is, that must be the toughest task of them all.
It's hard because, like, you know, well, she's hilarious and I enjoy riffing with my friends and I've done comedy movies, so I understand people thinking that. But, like, it's tough to put the pressure on people. Like, you know, when we're on set, we have amazing jokes written for us. But here, like, I'm just trying to be myself. You know what I mean? So, like, if I'm not feeling funny, I don't want to force it. And then that's really bad comedy when you try to force jokes. Like, there were multiple times when the first night I got a little hungover because we had a rough day one, and then Marshawn pulled out his Hennessy and we're like, yes, this is good shit. This is good content. Like, me drinking with Marshawn, that's good content. But we drank till like midnight, and then Richard Sherman and Ronda Rousey were up at like 4 a.m. working out, and I was like still drunk in a way, you know. And I'm like, I guess I'm getting up, like 5 a.m., let's go. I like go out there. I'm like doing crunches with Richard. And once again, I'm like, is this good for the show? Like, I can't escape my brain. And so I'm up for a few hours. And then I'm like, I guess it's like 8 a.m. Like, I guess I'm going to go try to sleep a little bit. I pull the shades down and I hear like six people laughing their ass off, like in the other room. And I'm like, fuck, what am I missing? Like, what am I missing? Do I need to force myself in there? Do I need to go be a part of whatever's happening? It was like a tough mental thing for me to escape.
That there's nothing.
I'm learning. I'm a little bitch. It's what I'm learning through this through venting with you guys. As I'm learning, I'm a sensitive little bitch.
And I guess like for you, like you have so many iconic roles that are comedic too. I'll never forget. I worked in TV, morning TV for a little bit, and after Steve Carell came down for an interview for, I think, like Foxcatcher, which is a very serious movie about like murder.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget. We had a PA was like, man, he wasn't really funny. I'm like, what did you, it's like, it's 7:30. What did you want him to do?
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough, dude. I mean, like, yeah, especially like, that was one of Steve's first serious movies. I feel like maybe I'm wrong, but yeah, he's just like going in there. Just wants to talk about this project he probably really loves and really cares about. That's how I felt. I was like, I just want to go. That was another thing was, man, it was loaded, guys. The 2 day, I don't know if you watched it, but I'm the first one gone. So I was only there for 2.5 days. But the showrunner or one of the producers was like, okay, you and Natasha are the funny people. So we want to do a bit with you guys where you're stuck in a pod and everyone has to come rescue you. That was actually Natasha, if you saw it. And it was my first time doing reality. And I was just like, I want to have a normal intro like everyone else. Like, I don't want a unique entrance in, you know what I mean? Like, the two funny people, and then we have Rhonda and Richard and everyone enters, but the two funny people get their own funny thing. And I was like, I just want to feel like I'm a part of the gang. Give me my own thing. And they're like, all right, your call time was 4 p.m. and now it is 4 a.m. and you are the first one in. And I was like, fuck. Maybe I should have done the pod bit.
Did you have a favorite reality show growing up or anything like that? Like Survivor, Real World, whatever, like anything like that you really cued into?
I got obsessed with Are You the One? I don't know if you guys watched that one on MTV. It was me and my buddy Nick Braun, and we were like coming back from a bachelor party 4 years ago, and we were just like fried, our brains. We couldn't be human beings. We're like, we just have to watch something. And someone recommended Are You the One? And we were like, this is the greatest piece of content we've ever seen. It's just like 23 to 24 year olds getting in a room. And they're like, you can win $1 million or you can get hammered and fuck each other. And like, you know, at that age, you're like, that is kind of worth $1 million, getting fucked up and having sex.
On TV, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And we got really obsessed and watched like all 5 or 6 seasons of that.
One of our favorite like cable reality things. It's not even reality. It's like an episode by episode competition. It's definitely Next on MTV, where they get off the bus and then.
Next was so funny.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the one that like was that from like the early 2000s?
Yeah, the bus that would show up and the guys would get off and give their little spiel.
Yeah, and like their JNCO shorts, and they're like, is like, I make grilled cheese pretty well, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
And the girls next to them, yes. I remember that being pretty problematic. I feel like
that was solely based on looks, nothing more. Room Raiders is good, where the best moment in the show, Room Raiders, is they would always blacklight the guys' beds, and it would just be an absolute
Jackson Pollock painting. Yeah,
times have changed for the better in some ways, and I would say that those two reality shows not being around is a good thing.
You, before we talk about some other things, I gotta ask, did you channel any? Like The Martian here early on, were you like, did you find yourself going, I have seen The Martian, I've watched Blade Runner 2049. Did you catch yourself doing that at all?
Yeah, well, I watched The Martian on the flight out from LA to Australia. And funny enough, when I got voted off, I talked to some of the producers and they based our first mission literally off the first scene of The Martian. If you guys watched it, you know, it's like the satellite collapsing over and we have to all go out there and repair it. And I was super stoked because like that was the main reason I wanted to go on the show, was to do these escape room style missions. And we had been in the house for like 2 days. I was clearly like stressed out and I was just like, okay, we're going. We're doing this mission. I'm fucking stoked. This is why I'm here. We get in our spacesuits. They're like 30 pounds. They're fucking heavy. Poor Natasha weighs like 100 pounds. She can barely stand up. We're like in pain for an hour, and they're like, okay, here you go. You're going to go do the mission. We open up the door, and they flew out $20,000 worth of fake red dust, and they were just shooting it at us in our face, and I have chronic asthma. And so I was like, oh, and our helmet like wouldn't close all the way. So it was just like getting inside, and I was like, oh, I'm going to fucking die right now. And I was like, here we go. No, like I'm going to fucking die. And I got really, really frightened and became a little bitch again and like stood on the wayside and couldn't even help at all. And that's why
I'd say if you did die, though, like I feel like later on in life, like the more the story gets passed down within your family, it could just morph into that you did die on Mars, though. Like there's enough context there.
Yes, that would save my family from a lot of shame of how I really died in Cooper PD with an asthma attack.
You'd be having a rough time in New York right now with the asthma. It's fucking gross out.
It
smells like a bonfire outside. It's disgusting.
Are you there right now?
Yeah.
What's going on? I've seen like Instagram photos and stuff.
I know, it's gross. I'm looking at my window right now. I can't see shit. It's like all just smoke and haze. And there's like Ron Mars. Are
there fires close by?
It's all in Canada. It just comes down.
Shit. Oh, it's not. Yeah.
They're really weird.
We got to talk about some other things as well since we got you here. I'm sure no one ever does. We got to talk about Superbad.
Never transition to Superbad.
It is in a different context. Maybe we like to ask this too, especially people who've been in things that are still culturally relevant. Do you ever, and how often does it happen? If it does happen, do you ever kind of like recontextualize for yourself Superbad and like what it's done for you? And do you view it maybe differently year to year, or like by 5 years? Has it changed for you?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question, because we had the 15-year anniversary last year, and we did like a whole big Vanity Fair article where everyone kind of talked about it, how everyone got cast, the whole stories with everything about, you know, I'm sure you read the Jonah not enjoying me in the audition came out in that. And I actually had like a moment where I was in Denmark with my fiance, and the article came out and I posted about it, and like my Twitter and Instagram and everything was blowing up more than it ever had. And I read the article and I kind of got emotional because I had never like been able to take myself out of it. I've never been able, just because like I'm surrounded, you know, I was McLovin and I get yelled at daily if I go out and stuff. And from my 20s to, let's say 20 to like 27, I was like, I'm more than that. Like, I'm an actor. I don't remember me for that. And now I'm far enough removed where I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, the fact that people still want to talk about it 16 years later is a huge, it's a huge deal. And, you know, not a lot of actors can be in a movie like that or get that opportunity. And so I did get pretty emotional, kind of took a step back and like read all the comments and the DMs and tried to respond to people. And it was a really beautiful thing. And I'm, you know, now forever grateful for that role. Like, there was probably a time where I was a little bitter, you know, in my early 20s. And now it's very much like I wouldn't have the opportunity to go to Mars with Marshawn Lynch and drink Hennessy if it wasn't for that movie. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't be able to go to Celtics games and have Robert Williams like walk up to me on the court and be like, dude, I'm a fan. You know what I mean? And like Kevin Love and Paul Pierce and all these people, it's like because of that movie. So I'm forever grateful. It's changed my life.
I think it's one that we've grown more appreciative of over time too. Where like there's humor, because like we watched, it came out when we were like, what, I was like 14, and like there's humor you get then, and then like you get it more as you grow up, like certain jokes and certain whatever. But one thing I remember discovering after like probably 10 years had passed is the blooper reel, and the blooper reel to me gets like tears in my eyes every time I watch it. Yeah. And just like I can't even imagine how hard it was not to laugh with that group of dudes, especially. Just like their one blooper part that always would get me was when it's you, Bill, and Seth sitting on the couch, like one line over and over and over again, and you just can't get it. It's just how hard was it to not break on a set like that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was a little easier for me because it was my first movie, so I was just like, I'm here to do this job, and I had a teacher on set, and I didn't get to like rip in between takes like everyone else did. I had to go do school, but I mean, that Bill Hader thing is like seared in my brain. Where he's so emotional and he's so sad that this guy that he loves, like, why would I do this to McLovin? I'm so sorry. And he couldn't even, at one point he just like tried to say it looking forward and then like had to say blocked your cock and looked at me while saying cock. And he just like 30 times, he couldn't do it. It was, that was one of the best moments.
I can't even imagine.
We'll talk about another movie next too, but I think just in general, this is a topic we talk about probably till we're blue in the face. I'm sure people may be sick of hearing us talk about this, but 2000s comedies in general, they stand kind of alone, especially in the last 20-ish, you know, years, or coming up on, you know, almost with 2023 now, almost like nearing 30 years into like this century. We don't get comedies like that much more. And obviously that's part of, you know, the studio system of the big blockbusters and the superhero movies and all that, which love. But the comedies like the Superbads of the world, the Role Models of the worlds, they're just not made much. Do you think that like anything can really bring those back as consistently, or is it we're just so far gone in this era of like dominating studio space or theater space and box office?
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't think it's just like as simple as like they can't be made anymore because, you know, the jokes and the times have changed. Like, I do think the Marvel DC system and the streaming system has really messed that up. But like, I feel like people got it in them. There's a new Jennifer Lawrence movie coming out soon. I can't think of the name, but it's like she's like a teacher and she's trying to date like a high school kid, right? Mm-hmm. Like the premise. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. But the premise.
If
right
you were
off
asking
that,
me on the spot, I'd know the name like that.
No, yeah. But it looks like it's kind of going back to those early 2000 comedies, and it looks very funny. And so like it can be done. I don't have the answer for it. I don't know if it's just maybe the funny people have gone on to, you know, produce
dramas. That was the series. Other concept. It's like, man, funny people are doing some really good fucking dramas nowadays.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's bizarre. Like you mentioned before, Role Models. This is one of our favorite films, I think, from that era. And I've always felt like it was almost got lost in the shuffle of that, like, group in that grouping of like really good comedies that everyone remembers, like Superbad or like, you know, what do you call it? Like, I Love You, Man, stuff like that.
Yeah.
It always felt like it got a little bit lost in that grouping, which I felt was very unfair. I don't know how you feel about looking back on it now, but I thought it was like right up there. I'm like 1, 2, 3 in like the top grouping of comedies in that group.
Yeah. It's interesting because like when it came out, you know, it was back in the day when like opening weekend box office numbers mattered, you know, like Superbad came out. It was fucking, what was it, like 25 million or 30 million opening weekend, which for a comedy was like unheard of. And then word of mouth, it was number one again for like 20 million. I remember Role Models came out and people, and it made like 17 or 18 million opening weekend, which is like really good for that kind of movie. And I think for me, like when I get recognized, that's a top three movie. It's like Superbad, Kick-Ass, Role Models. So I it feels like people love it, and it's, you know, it's being watched and sticking around, but yeah, I don't know. I'm not too sure.
The Ken Jack mentioned like the blooper for Superbad, but there's some outtakes and even some extended scenes from Role Models that there's one that I can't find it. And maybe because I don't use my DVD player anymore and I can't find my Role Models DVD, but the, no offense to your character, I think the best character in that movie is definitely Ken Marino's character. It just absolutely,
yeah.
I guess you're not your stepdad, but your mom's boyfriend just absolutely kills me.
Yes.
But he's when he's making fun of your, didn't make the final take, but he's making fun of your outfit. Paul Rudd's character is like, he's like, what about fashion advice? You're wearing track pants and a Hawaiian shirt. And it just, there's something about that back and forth at that dinner table that is still my favorite. Just,
oh, that dinner table scene was, that was intense. That was like kind of a turning point, right? Like kind of emotional, half comedy, half emotional. That was interesting because that was during the writer's strike. I remember in 2008.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. There were a few scenes where the writer's strike happened and we had to like sit at the dinner table and we couldn't like write. We had to just talk out what they would say, which was the first time I did anything like that. And there was, I think, a deleted scene with me and Paul Rudd sitting outside a tent. And we just had to like sit there. We couldn't use the script or anything because of the writer's strike. That was a surreal moment. But hey, it worked out. I enjoyed it.
That's crazy. I didn't. Yeah. You don't hear many like even mild success stories from the writer's strike era. It's like
usually bad,
Quantum
of
Solace or, you know, Heroes being cut. Yeah, all that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was like the last week of shooting and we were like, we just have to pull this out. You know what I mean? Like we're too close to the finish line.
I'm curious. Do you ever get any LARPer feedback on your performance or any of your guys' performances? Because I feel like they're a community that would be very like, you know, on top of their media representation.
Yeah. I think they're just stoked to have a big media representation. You know, I don't think they were like, you didn't swing it the right way or whatever. I think they were like, yes, like we're represented in a very fun, supportive way. Like we're not kind of getting razzed on. So they were stoked.
Yeah. I like that. Okay. We're going to do something. We call it a six pack. It's just six pack of rapid fire questions. This is where we'll get into more of the freakier shit.
Oh, shit. Okay.
The first one being, what is a movie that you auditioned for, really wanted, but didn't get?
I was up for Zombieland back in the day,
which would have been
sick. But then I didn't get it, and I got Kick-Ass like 3 weeks later. So maybe it was meant to be. Yeah.
It all worked out, yeah.
I assume that would have been the Jesse Eisenberg role. Yeah.
Yes, correct.
Not Woody Harrelson, yeah. That would have been,
never know.
That would have been an odd transition. You guys as a duo, he's Tallahassee or whatever.
not bad.
What was your weirdest fan interaction so far?
Oh, dude, there's so many. So many.
Yeah, I feel like you're up. I feel like comedic actors definitely it's up there for the weirdest ones too.
Yeah.
We were just talking to
from, oh my God, I forgot his name. We were talking to someone from Hamilton and they had someone drive home. He had people drive home and follow him home from the play and try to like ambush him for an autograph. Like that shit's crazy.
Yeah. Well, that reminds me. I'll tell you three that kind of hit the gamut of it all. One was like right when it came out and we went to a Chipotle a week after it came out and some girl across the Chipotle recognized me and goes, McLovin, and she runs across the Chipotle. I'm in the middle of the booth. She literally like climbs over my friend's laps and like starts grabbing my face to pull me. I was like, I gotta get the fuck out of here. We ran out of there and then her and her friends chased me out and he like put his finger in his pants and he's like, I got a boner, like as we were driving out in the parking lot, like you could have got hit. Then there was another one that reminded me of what you said, which was like a group of dudes spotted me as I was on my way to the bathroom, maybe like 19 or 20 years old. And I went into the urinal to pee and like they all crowded me like while I was peeing and they're like, dude, no way, it's McLovin. And like my fucking little dick in my hand peeing still. And I was like, okay. And now I use stalls. Like that is, yeah. I gotta go to therapy. Like I can't pee in a urinal anymore. Like that moment was seared in my brain.
Oh my God.
And then there was like a like more adult interaction that happened a couple months ago. That I was just like so strange. My car, I got a notification to move my car. They're like trimming the trees, you know, like move your car at 6 a.m. And I had like partied the night before a little bit. I was a little hungover. And I like go move my car at 6 a.m. in my robe and like all the tree trimmers are out there. And they're like, is that McLovin? And I'm like hungover and like coming out of my house, just trying to move my car, looking like dog shit. And I was like, this sucks. So it happens.
Every time we ask this, usually there's at least one bathroom story involved. Always. It feels like a weird spot. People just feel comfortable ambushing people.
Your corner.
I have a sixth sense. It sounds lame, but I have a sixth sense for that shit. I went and saw Pearl at the AMC, you know, whenever it came
great
out.
Movie. Great ago. Movie.
Fucking amazing. And like smoked a little weed beforehand, which is great for the movie. But then like fan interactions can be a little weird on my end if I'm stoned. Like during the movie, I had to go to the bathroom. I ran out there. And there was this like big guy who worked at the AMC, nice kid. I don't mean to like razz on him or anything, but he was like a little uncomfortable and he recognized me on the way in. And he spotted me going to the bathroom and like, I didn't like see him. I kind of just like clocked it, like Spidey sensed it. I went in the bathroom and I like went to a urinal and I was like, I should go in a stall right now. And I real quickly like went in the stall and locked the door. And it was like, he trudged in. You know, like fucking horror movie where you like look down underneath the stall and he just trudges in. He's just like looking for me. And I'm like sitting in there just like a stoned little scaredy cat. But I knew he was coming in to see me and I was going to have my urinal moment again.
Did he do the horror thing where he like kicks at each door open one by one, opening each one?
He had the size for it. He was a big boy, but he was sweet afterwards. He took a photo and nice guy.
Okay, so here's an option for you. The next movie that you're in defines your career. You win an Oscar, all the great stuff, but Boston won't win another championship for 10 years across any sport. Do you say yes?
I take the Celtics championships, man. Right now in my I've been doing this for 16 years. I'm grateful for the career I've had. I'm making a lot of music right now. I'm touring with my friend Ben Queller. I got some good animated stuff lined up. I feel like I love sports too much, you know? Maybe there's going to be some directors listening to this and they're like, he's not passionate enough.
It's Christopher Nolan.
I like that
Nolan.
You think directors
he's
are listening.
Like, yeah. He's like the biggest fan of Barstool.
Scorsese's watching this right now. He's like, no, baby, he ain't coming in my next picture.
I was thinking about it, but
But yeah, Scorsese wants you to play Jesus, but you're out now.
It's too late in this next movie, this is the next one. Very serious. I'm sure you've been asked this before. What does Seth Rogen smell like? Our fans wanted to know.
Wow. He doesn't really have, you know, unless he's smoking weed, obviously he smells like weed. But otherwise I haven't picked up an odor. I haven't.
That's good.
Yeah. It's not BO. It's not cologne, but he does smoke a lot of weed. So I'm sure that that's wafting around set sometimes.
Growing up a Boston fan in Los Angeles, what's the worst insult you got from Laker fans or any other just Boston hater?
I mean, to be honest, I kind of love being a Boston fan in LA. I love being sticking out like a sore thumb. Everyone's been pretty polite, actually. I was at the Miami Heat Celtics game, game six, when Derek White had the 0.2-second shot. And crazy. I had a lot of Heat fans, you know, they spotted me in my green shirt and there was a lot of fuck you McLovins to be had. Which I kind of like, because then I can throw it back. If I pick up that it's friendly, you know, you can tell if it's in good sport. But that was fun and intense.
You have to run into this guy, obviously, then. This Lakers is my favorite Lakers fan.
Who is he?
He's just this random guy. Just he hits him with the Lakers. He got the big gold chain. That's my favorite Lakers fan ever. That's a classic.
I don't go to too many games at the Staples Center because the Boston Garden, they hooked me up with courtside tickets in the best way.
Have you sat next to our boss? Have you sat next to our boss Dave Portnoy on the wood yet?
I met him and his woman before game five this year. We're sitting next to each other, not on the court, but like in the Putnam Club or whatever it is. We finally got to meet each other. He's a very, very sweet man. You guys, do you know him pretty well?
Oh yeah, He's our boss. Yep.
He's the guy.
Yeah.
Straight up boss. Yeah.
We would all call him a very sweet man.
I was going to say, he might be a little nicer to me than you guys, but
very sweet.
He has like a good personality. I don't know. You read things online about people and
they sat behind like the scores table for one of them. And we were watching and we're like, is he sitting next to the guy keeping stats? And I was like, that's an odd courtside seat.
he gets shirts made. You know what I mean? Like,
he had one for every two. Game. It was
I know, team. Which is a beautiful thing. Plus, I'm like, you know, me and my fiance, we're like, we're courtside. We have to look nice, put our nice clothes on.
Wearing our Gucci and our Prada.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got a t-shirt.
That game, if Tatum, I'm not saying they would have won, but if Tatum didn't sprain his ankle, it'd be a different game.
In the first 10 seconds, yeah, that was pretty.
First fucking 10 seconds, dude. Just terrible, terrible.
All right, last one. If you could get a guest spot in any currently running comedy show, what would it be? What's a comedy show you would love to be a little guest star in?
Ooh, man. Well, South Park is the greatest comedy show of all time. Consistently pushing the buttons, consistently risky, consistently topical and hilarious. I would love to do a voice on that. That would be killer.
That'd be awesome.
We talk about comedies, you know, being hard to do. They still do it. And they're like racy. You know, you have a white guy doing it. It's the most dramatic Asian accent. And they get away with
every
it.
Every time.
Every time.
Funny is funny.
They just opened up up Casa Bonita, right? I think, or they're opening up pretty soon.
That's right.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
They put $40 million of their own money into it. They're psychos, although they make more than enough back from all these other places.
We'll ask you one more before we let you go here. I got like a bonus one because I feel like you'll actually give me a good answer. I love this quest. We don't often get a good answer. First time you ever sat down in a movie, definitely when you were younger, and you said, oh, wow, movies can be bad. Do you remember a movie that you sat down and you're like, oh, this is not very good?
Ooh.
Mine, I'll give you content. Mine is the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes with Mark Wahlberg. That's the first time I went, oh,
wow,
this isn't great.
Man, that's a really hard question because I remember, I mean, being a kid, you're just like, all of them are pretty good. You know what I mean? Like your mind is being blown. I don't have that answer, but I remember the first time I saw a movie after shooting Superbad and I was like, oh, a little bit of the movie magic has been killed for me. I went and saw The Departed after and I had like just wrapped it and I was like, oh, he's like hitting his mark, which is like a little pink tape. You know, I was kind of taken aback a little bit. But I mean, that movie's incredible.
Okay, now Scorsese's really out. He's like,
yeah, you're so fucked, dude. You're never playing Jesus.
Yeah.
In this fucking new movie he's making.
It's a good question, though. I'm gonna think on it and I'll get back to you guys.
Okay. That was good. It was, again, but you're right. Because when you're young, you like everything. Like, I'm sure I had my Jar Jar Binks action figure when I went to go see Planet of the Apes. But then I was like,
yeah. I know. I mean, like, you know, I went and saw Starship Troopers with my dad, and I'm like, I'm sure that's a bad movie, but it was also the first movie I saw tits in. So, like,
exactly.
That movie ruled. That's a great movie.
Okay, I rewatched that 2 days ago, dude. I was like, it's a movie. There's Paul Verhoeven with all his movies. There's like a big actiony front, like in RoboCop 2, and then there's like a really interesting, like, subversive message behind it all too. Like, it's all anti hyper nationalism behind Starship Troopers.
It's like super campy, cool. Right? It's like super.
Yeah, when was the last time you watched it?
Oh, I mean, probably not since I was 7 or 8.
You should watch it again.
It's the scene where he's like trying to get her shirt off, right? And she can't get it stuck. He gets stuck. How brilliant is that? God damn.
There's a scene they shot in the shower there, and all of the cast said, like, we're not going to all be naked unless you're naked too. So if Verhoeven shot the entire thing butt-ass naked.
Wow.
Along with his like AD, like all these dudes were butt-ass naked filming them in the shower.
They were ahead of the curve back in the day.
You don't want to dare Europeans to be in a nude off because they'll fuck you up.
Thank you so much, man. Check out on Fox, Stars on Mars, and everything else. Now you got to go watch Starship Troopers, but thank you so much. Been a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, it's great to meet you, dudes. I appreciate it. Real easy talk, and we'll do it again when I got something else to promote.
We like to hear that. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, gentlemen.
See you later, man.
All right, and from one super bad actor to the other, we also talked to Michael Cera.
Hey, quick note. No Michael Cera interview in this episode. I know we delayed the pod for it, but we did not realize, and by we mean me, did not realize that we'd be using the Press Junket Zoom, not our own Zoom link. Therefore, we don't have it as an immediate download. It takes a little while for them to get it over to us. So just the Chris Mintz-Plasse interview today, and we'll air the Michael Cera one in the future. That's it. So just a heads up if we reference it a bunch of times. Okay, see ya.
I'll preemptively say Michael Cera was awesome.
Yeah, Michael Cera was great. We haven't talked to him. I hope he was cool. I assume he will be. Transformers Rise of the Beasts. Pull up my synopsis here. Some real surprising voice cast.
During the 90s, by the way, of Transformers, the Maximals join the Autobots as allies in the battle for Earth.
Optimus Prime and the Autobots take on their biggest challenge yet. When a new threat capable of destroying the entire planet emerges, they must team up with a powerful faction of Transformers known as the Maximals to save Earth. based on Beast Wars, Transformers, which if you're a 90s kid, that is probably the way you got in the Transformers. That's why there's animals and stuff. It's a whole thing. You can get even further into it.
It's a whole thing.
It's a lot. It's a lot to get into. Cast for this movie. Again, there are some surprising voices in this.
Yes. I didn't realize there's Pete Davidson until after the movie. I had no clue
what?
He was in it. I had
really?
No clue he was in it. Yeah. I was like trying. I'm like, that name, his voice is
really
familiar. I can't.
Interesting.
I can't place it.
Fun robot. Fun voice.
Great,
I thought he did, yeah. I think he did a good job.
Good job.
Anthony Ramos in the lead role. Dominic Fishback also kind of like co-lead there as the human characters. Peter Cullen back as Optimus Prime. Pete Davidson voices Mirage. Ron Perlman voiced Optimus Primal.
Yeah.
Michelle Yeoh, which I did not.
That I put together.
I did, but also I was like, no, that's not. I go, that's not. So I didn't want to take my phone out. And I took a quick bathroom break and I ran to the bathroom. I'm like, wait, I got to look that up. And I was like, holy fuck, that is her. And it sounds exactly like her. But I was like, I don't think she's doing this.
Yeah.
Is she doing Rise of the Beasts? If she was. Peter Dinklage plays
bad guy, yeah.
Scourge, yeah, the main villain.
Scourge.
Or Scourge. Scourge, definitely. Yeah,
Scourge.
One of the main villains.
Scourge.
Scourge. And then, what's her name? I got to get her actual name.
Which robot?
Anthony Ramos' mother in the movie, played by someone who was in a movie we just reviewed.
Anthony Romo.
Anthony Romo. Lauren Velez, she voices... Miles Morales' mom.
Yeah, that's right.
In Spider-Verse.
Rio.
Yeah. So this is not tied to the Bay movies. By all accounts, Bumblebee, which was a reboot, they were going to tie them. I think there were some various scenes and moments that tie. I think they're going to show the cube or like maybe they're going to show Megatron frozen under the Hoover Dam or whatever. They were going to do that with Bumblebee, and I believe it was taken out. Whether they wanted to do it or whether it wasn't received properly, they made Bumblebee, which Bumblebee was pretty solid. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed Bumblebee really quite a bit. This is a sequel to Bumblebee.
They didn't market that one bit.
No, they did not do a very good job of that.
I did not know.
I think that's on purpose, no? They want people to think, like, this is connected to this thing that, like, you may have loved in 2007.
Right. You're right. That could have been intentional. That would make sense. I enjoyed this movie quite a bit. It is, I will preface this, if you don't like Transformers, you're not going to walk out of this liking Transformers. I don't like, you need to have some sort of pre-existing enjoyment of either the animated series, you know, Beast Wars, the original, whatever, or one of the older ones. I really like 2007 Transformers. I think it's very well done for what it is. I think Michael Bay kind of lost his way pretty much immediately after that.
Yeah, like in perpetuity.
The Matrix of leadership. Yeah, like they just kind of
Transformers too, like with all the other movies he made.
Yeah, it just I quite enjoyed this movie. I think there's a big thing that works in this movie. Here's the moment where I know why this movie worked more than maybe the previous ones. It's a bit of a spoiler. Not really. Like, this shouldn't surprise you. There's a part in the movie. If you're spoiled by the fact that there's a part in the movie when the Transformers meet up for the first time, then I'm sorry. That's not. When they show up to the warehouse after Anthony Ramos tries to steal the car, it turns out it's Pete Davidson robot, Mirage. When they show up, only three other Transformers show up. And you're like, B, R, C, and Optimus. You're like, oh. I was like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
There's only four. When the villains show up and they have a big fight, it's only three of them. There's like little spider bots, whatever. They kind of stripped down a lot of the having too many. Now, there are the Maximals. There's the other Transformers as well. But part of the problem when Transformers really gets into, like, I think the muck is that it's just a bunch of bullshit on screen. Like, I even think the original Transformers, like, think about one of the cooler sequences in the first one. It's that highway chase scene, right?
Yeah.
But there's only really one Decepticon. It's the later ones. It's always so many. And it's just like, it hurts your fucking, you're like, what the fuck am I looking at right now? And it becomes kind of an eyesore. I think they did a really nice job at stripping it down and keeping it pretty simple. I don't think this is as good as Bumblebee. I think this is still, unfortunately, below average for me. But I had quite a good time with this. I gave the first one an 80, the original, 07. I gave Bumblebee a 78. After that, it dropped down to 37. It really, yeah, there's a big drop off. The last night I gave a 3 out of 100, Dark of the Moon an 11, Age of Extinction a 24, Revenge of the Fallen a 37. I'm going to give this a 66 out of 100. I mean, I think they did a really good job with what they had. I think stripping things down and not having it be just visual fucking goo was a beautiful thing for this. And I think that's kind of got to be the only way that this works live action, because otherwise every animated version of this is just better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm with you on a lot of that. There's stuff that works, stuff that doesn't. I think the action was as good as it gets in most any of the Transformers movies, besides like the "It's Starscream" shit. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't have, I don't think, a moment like that, but all the action, I think, on this, when they kind of progress up in scale, like you're saying, like with the smaller fight at the museum and then they go up into the big fight at the end, I think that all worked well. I think the biggest plus for this, for me anyway, was the soundtrack. I think the soundtrack was unbelievably good, and it really made moments that would be okay much better.
Like, well, Gooch can't connect. He's from
ditched Kentucky. The soundtrack 30 minutes. I loved it, but they ditched it like 30
don't
minutes.
Don't call it a comeback. Bumblebee coming out.
What are you talking about? That was awesome. That was awesome, but that went away for an hour and a half.
That was the end of the movie.
Yeah. Exactly. It went away in like the middle hour of the movie.
No, I mean, I disagree, dude.
Bumblebee scene was awesome. It was like Thor landing on Wakanda.
Dude, literally, my theater was going fucking crazy, man.
Yeah, my theater was nuts, too.
They were going ballistic, and like, so I think that worked really well. Like the scene where they do I'm Cool Like That with Mirage, like doing all the duplicates in the high on the bridge chase, awesome. Fucking great. I thought that stuff
again though, that's one, like, yeah. I gotta say, like, I think there's a common thread of why this worked, even if you didn't love it, which I gotta sense there's a little there's a negative zone in this room over here.
Yeah,
but I think you could probably agree with that, though. Like, it
soundtrack,
definitely was
soundtrack selection is great.
Yeah, no, yeah. I like the soundtrack. Yeah. I just wish that they had stuck with it through the whole movie.
But then it becomes a music video. You gotta like, get into
sweet.
You gotta change it eventually. But the soundtrack was like a character on its own. I thought it was incredible. I think the cast is great. Anthony Ramos, I think, is a good Stanwood Wiki fill-in. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You know, you kind of just have to plug in people. It's not fucking Cade Yeager. Fuck Cade Yeager.
Cade Yeager
forever.
Stinks. Yeah, Cade
get
Yeager.
Get fucked,
stinks.
You bozo fucking Cade Yeager and all those kids that they had in the last one, too. I think Ramos is really cool, and I think Mirage, like, Pete Davidson is a guy we should be so sick of. You know what I mean?
I thought he was very enjoyable.
Like, him being in Fast and Furious, him being like the nonstop target of like TMZ bullshit, he's like never out of like the word cloud. And like him being in this and me not even realizing it's him for a while, and like him, I think he was great. Mirage is a really cool
guy. He has a really good voice for voiceover stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's better suited for that.
Yeah. It made it cartoony. It made it fun. It didn't make it too stupid and serious.
Yeah.
Also, Michael Bay doing the sequels to Transformers was just, it's just Joe pitching cities in Arrested Development. He's like, well, you're now living in Fuck City. Like, that's every Transformers sequel, yeah.
There's a big twist at the end of this I thought was really smart. And not the decision that's isolated for the movie, but for the universe on a whole. I think that was really smart.
That's going to fucking rule. Come on.
I know. It's going to be
come on.
Shut your fucking
mouth.
Laugh
out loud funny.
Laugh out loud good.
Laugh out loud.
Dude, it's so fucking good. It's a great idea. But the only thing that's going to be bad is like, it's a fucking dumb movie, but like, is it as dumb as any other Transformers movie? No. And it's really tough to like ground a movie where a truck turns into a robot. Like, you know what I mean? That's a very tough thing to do. And other than that, it's just long. It's definitely like, you could shave 20 minutes off this, no problem. But other than that, I really fucking liked it. I ended up giving it, I'm at like a 74 out of 100. Really enjoyed it a ton, a lot more than I thought I would, just because I'm not a big Transformers guy. I never watched Beast Wars, any of that shit. Had no baseline with that sort of stuff. So like when they maximize, I don't know what you call it, like the first time.
Maximize. Rhinox. Maximize.
And they turn to like the big boys. It was fucking, everyone's going nuts. And like, I'm into it. I'm watching it and I'm like getting into the beasts. So I liked way more of it than I disliked. Really big fan of Transformers. It's my third best behind the original and Bumblebee, like years, like with you.
Chris, I'll let you go next. I think you also liked it.
I liked it the most out of all you guys. I thought this movie was fucking awesome. I don't know. Like, the thing is, while watching it, I realized the first Transformers for whatever reason, I was 12 years old when I came out, really was like a big, big, big movie in my life. Like I've seen it a million times. I loved it when it came out. I think it has, if we're ranking CG like ever put on film, it belongs in that like all time great discussion.
It was very wow, which is, there's not a lot of wow things anymore on screen. Like everything can be done where it was like, oh fuck, like that's sick.
And they hold up exceptionally well. The sequels are like just shocking with how insane they are. And I think it's so fucking funny how they just blame the writer's strike for the second one. It's like, dude, that was going to be some bullshit regardless. Stop it. So watching this, I kind of got that wonderment feeling of nostalgia that I got when watching the original back in 07, where it's nice. It's a nice, simple premise. They don't convolute anything. They give basic character development. I like Anthony Ramos. I thought Dominique Fishback was really miscast. In fact, I actually had a few hard laughs of her trying to explain like science jargon. You are clearly reading off of a script. But the action, phenomenal. The effects, great. Like, you get into the characters, you get into the story. I can't tell you how much I agree with you, Jeff, about, especially when you got to the sequels, you could not tell what the fuck was going on in the action. You thought Megatron died like 8 times because all the Decepticons had the exact same like character design. Where here, that final action sequence, which is shot during the day, you can tell what's going on. You guys brought up the soundtrack. There's a lot of crowd-pleasing moments. I don't know. Like I thought this was wonderful summer spectacle. Like I don't understand what people are criticizing this and using those criticisms as praise for other films. And we could get into that a little bit more maybe later, but like, I dug this. I think it's going to connect with people. It is everything I want out of summer spectacle.
Well.
Yeah, it did well. It's got a fun cast, a good soundtrack. I really feel like they've injected some new life into this franchise. And that's the thing that almost, I'm not gonna say gets overlooked, but like, I think people don't understand how profitable the Transformers movies have been. Like, crazy, crazy popular. I think with this series heading in the direction I think it's heading in, gotta give them a lot of credit. They didn't make us wait till after the credits. They tacked on the final scene at the end of the fucking movie the way that it should be done. And I didn't see it coming. I did not see that twist coming when they and I thought that was cleverly done. And I'm like, all right, you want to get nuts? Let's get nuts. I'm ready for the sequel. 85 out of 100. I really enjoyed it.
You're fucking crazy. If you're not excited. You're a big loser energy not excited.
Boo.
Come on. You're telling me you're not excited?
Excited for the sequel?
Yeah.
If they do the G.I. I mean, we're in spoiler section, spoilers. Right? They do the G.I. Joe. I mean, yeah.
We're going to. Come on.
I'm going to have to tease that.
I'll back off.
I'm an absolute sucker for that shit.
I'll back off. I know you hit a hoo-ah in the theater.
stood
up with your regal like, points.
Semper Fi, yeah.
It was actually very funny because I was sitting next to like this 50-something-year-old woman who had brought her two teenage-ish sons to see Transformers. You know, just the classic American family experience. And when that happened, we just looked at each other and she goes, what the fuck? She was so confused.
Man, what a crumbuggin.
I do think the Chris said it again, though. We all kind of said it. I do think Ramos was really solid. And now Ramos isn't like a kid, but also he's younger. And not to be sound like an ageist, there's a very clear reason why his like kind of serious but kind of fun, loose, goofball energy works. So did Shia LaBeouf's, especially in the first one. Katie Yeager, Mark Wahlberg playing like a dad. This needs to still have the vibe of being fun and being for kids, and that's what makes it. So Ramos was great. It really did make me realize how dumb it is that Mark Wahlberg was
so fucking, it's like when you're stupid. You're a kid and you're playing with your action figures, and you're like, you know, you're smashing them together, and your dad asks you to like explain what's going on, and you're like,
it's so weird how that works, because I remember when the Age of Extinction came out. Like, the general chorus of people, because this was at a time when everyone was done with Shia LaBeouf. The general response of people was, well, Mark Wahlberg's a much better protagonist than Shia LaBeouf was. I'm like, no, never he wasn't.
True. Like, especially not in this universe. Like,
right. You can Shia LaBeouf universe. As an actor.
He's not better either way than Shia LaBeouf. He's equally as bad.
Yeah, well, I think Shia in the first one is like an awesome, like just nerdy antagonist. Like, I think he's charming in that.
Yeah, he's I think he plays a good like dick high school kid, but like kind of down on his luck, needs to have like a good break. Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
And then you get to Katie Hager, who's like, they go out of their way to make the most unlikable protagonist in film history. They get back to basics here, and keep in mind, I was so done with the series after four, I did not see Bumblebee, so I
go back and watch it. Yeah,
Bumblebee is.
Oh, no, I'm going to now, because, like I said, I didn't. I thought this was like a reboot of the series. I did not know it was a continuation of Bumblebee. And I know enough about that to pick up on the references they made and shit. But yeah, dug it.
Gooch is right. They did not market that well at all. That was not.
They barely even. It barely even ties in. They barely tie in.
It's smart.
Which one? What is it? Is it the third one, Dark of the Moon, where Optimus execution style kills Sentinel Prime on the bridge? Optimus, no!
Shoots him in the face.
Shoots him in the
head.
Fuck.
No prisoners.
Yeah, like what the fuck, dude? And then
one thing in those sequels that people don't talk about is how Optimus Prime is a fucking maniac. Like, I think there's a part in the second one in which I think he goes up to the Fallen and says, "Give me your face."
And then he kills Megatron immediately after that. Megatron helped him kill. So yeah, that's
yeah.
Optimus. The execution style fucking kills him on the bridge. You're like, what the fuck?
Dude, I fucking love that. You know what's still crazy to me about this one is that you're talking about the reviews, Chris. Discussing Film said it was the blandest movie of the franchise.
Yeah, that's
like,
crazy.
Are you on fucking drugs, dude?
That's crazy to me.
That's insane to me.
Like that's someone who, like, I would say with confidence, like, I'm not saying they're a liar. Like, they didn't lie. That person hasn't seen The Last Knight.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy.
Dude, fucking nuts to me.
Anyway, let's hear Robbie's score.
It is better than those. It's better than all the Jaeger films. Like, that just goes.
Yeah, okay.
Actually, now you're talking about Jaeger. Imagine that a crossover of them in Pacific Rim. Like, one of the Jaegers fighting an Autobot. I'd be down for
them
in
Attack on Titan.
Yeah.
I love the first. I not love, but I really like the first 30 minutes of the movie. Like, I think it's set up in a way that Bumblebee actually set up, where it's smaller scale, or it feels smaller scale, feels very intimate. It feels like the 90s too, despite all the ridiculous "this is the 90s" references that they have in there. Like, they make a Mark Wahlberg like self-referential, like, "Oh, he'll never be an actor," which I don't know if that was a shot at him or, but they just ditched that though. I feel like they ditched it and it went straight back to kind of the Michael Bay movies, where it's just so many fucking robots and it becomes this big scale thing where I'm like, why the fuck are the humans here? It's like, once the Transformers movies get to that large of a scale where it's like basically Endgame at the very end, Avengers Endgame, we don't need Anthony Ramos or Dominique Fishback there. Like, they were completely out of place. They had to give them a fucking robot suit.
It is funny because everyone says, and you'll see this, Chris, when you watch it, the opening of Bumblebee on Cybertron is what everyone says. They point out, they go, make that movie.
That is the
in that case, for sure.
The Transformers lore is awesome. I've seen people.
Great video games, too, by the way. War for Cybertron, great game.
Yeah, and I actually saw someone like with an interesting take. Like, they should just do the Cybertron movie, just make an animated movie. These Transformers would.
Aren't they doing that?
If they
something
are,
was lined smart. Up, I thought, right?
Some animated movie was like, I thought they were.
Yeah, I thought so too. I might be wrong.
But yeah, no. So once we get past that initial, I guess, the fight at the museum, that's where it becomes just a lot for me. And I'm just like, and I don't think the action looked great. I saw Chris in your review. It looked like you said, like, and you meant this as praise, two action figures slamming into each other.
Right.
That's exactly what it looked like to me. I was like, I think there's more interesting ways to do CGI action. We just saw a ton of great CGI action in Way of Water. Like, there are interesting ways to make it happen versus just two big robots smashing into each other. Have them do interesting fight moves on each other. Do some interesting kills.
I thought there were for once.
They were really good.
Mm. Yeah, I thought there were for once.
Mm. They look great, dude. The fight scene, like, all the different weapons they used to, Maximals using the fucking swords and spears and shit. I thought it was awesome.
Dude, when that Falcon started shooting laser beams out of its fucking throat.
What do you want a Falcon to do? Take a fucking dump on him?
Boo. The Dominique Fishback character, you said it was miscast. I think it was unnecessary.
Yeah, not a necessary character.
Yeah, okay.
That was, you need a female character.
That, okay, so that all
Basil exposition.
Obviously, there's a lot of this that I didn't love. I will say I agree with the idea of the over, because that again, that's a problem with the Bay sequels. You get like in the first one, the parents are fun. In the future one, in the sequels, yeah, there's too much parents.
Yeah.
You know, it's overload of humans. So I will agree with you.
I think you dump the younger brother, you keep her, or the other way around, or something, and then you can shave 20 minutes off the movie.
Shockingly, didn't hate the little brother.
No, I'm just saying, like, as far as like split time and making it too long, I guess, like, you got to dump one of them. You know what I mean?
I thought it was setting up for like a, at one point, like a heist movie.
I thought they're going
like after like him and Mirage like finally meet each other. Mirage kind of comes off like bit of a scoundrel. I'm like, oh, they're gonna get up to shenanigans together.
I thought they're gonna use their technology to cure his sickle cell, but no, apparently that's too much to fucking
you know. Yeah, you know they this could
is,
do
yeah so awesome. Easily
weirdly in the middle of this Transformers movie they're like, it's a scathing like it's like a scathing piece of art on the American health
administrator
system.
Yeah.
it's like what are we doing here? The end setup though, did you guys think it was gonna be Sector 7? I thought that for sure was what it was.
I had no idea.
I had zero clue what was happening.
No, because I knew it wasn't connected to the. It dawned on me kind of. Well, we kind of knew what the twist was because he said it, but like, because Ken Jack saw it first. But like, it would have kind of dawned on me and it kind of made sense and clicked, like visually seeing, because I thought it was coming in the post credit scene.
Yeah.
But there it was like in the movie.
Yeah.
It kind of dawned like, as the setup for like what was happening, and also him being a former soldier, like it kind of like those types of things clicked. But I think it's awesome. Like I think they're going to follow through on it.
And
the Hasbro thing is a big deal. Like they are trying to really hammer home the Hasbro.
Does this make Snake Eyes canon? Snake Eyes canon?
I don't think Snake Eyes would be part of this. I don't know though.
I want to play the execution clip.
Revival of our race. You must see why I had to betray. You didn't betray me. You betrayed yourself. No, Optimus!
And just point blank.
Point blank and blasted his ass.
Holy shit. Optimus Prime in the Bay sequels is like what people talk about, the like Batman and like the like Schumacher. Or yeah, Snyder. Like, yeah. Like even then, like he's still kind of killed. You're like, what the fuck?
No, Optimus. Fucking cat. Like, may as well have curb stomped him like American History X. Jesus.
There's also one more thing we need to talk about. RC, why'd they give that robot such a big old dumper?
Yeah, she was hot. I'm sorry.
Hi, robot. Yeah, question.
Why'd they make the robot hot?
I'm not in the horny way. I do think RC is one of the cooler.
Motorbike, yeah.
It's one of the cooler Transformers.
Her transforming, I was like, how's this bike going to transform into anything?
They also can't help themselves making a Transformer with an accent.
Yeah.
They always got to throw one in there.
Yeah.
I like the big British dumpy plane.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny.
Who was the plane voiced by?
I got no fucking clue.
I gotta look at it now.
Him like just crashing.
And that was actually the plane with the Toretto's on it.
Yeah, that's right. That we'll see again in 5 years when fucking Transformers or Fast 10 Part 2 comes out. I completely forgot about that. Was it RC or was it something else? What was that Transformer? Was it RC?
Are you looking it up? Gooch?
Who the big one was?
Yeah.
Looks like it was John DiMaggio.
Oh, John DiMaggio, that voice of Bender from Futurama and many other great things. A lot of Studio Ghibli credits under his name.
The old hit king.
John DiMaggio.
Unicron. He's eating planets.
Unicron teased famously at the end of the last.
Why is he eating planets?
I don't think.
He needs metals. And
that's what he does.
Yeah. What's your fucking problem, dude?
Come on.
Pretty awesome, but I just. Was he hungry?
What's your fucking problem, man?
The Matrix of Leadership.
Oh, it's her name is spelled RC, like ARCEE. That's dumb. But I do like that. I did like that. That was a good Transformer.
It's a cool Transformer. It's a hot Transformer.
It was. No question.
The Cube.
Kept poking the lady next to me. I said, this Transformer's hot, isn't she?
This lady might not exist.
I will say I do miss
Honda forever.
Please don't talk to me.
There's nothing quite like. I like that they infuse the old Transformers theme song in the final battle. Yeah, I love that.
That's awesome.
I Well, not the old one, the live action one.
Yeah.
I do miss, you're right. The Optimus monologue with a Linkin Park song is
just I am Optimus Prime.
Calling all Autobots.
I mean, like, people joke about that, but that moment, like, that's a 16-year-old movie. Like, that movie has
it was awesome.
It's an awesome moment.
It's endured more than people think. Like, it's those movies were
it was a meme like
the first 5 years ago. Of YouTube, the number one watched video every single year was a Linkin Park music video.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's very funny.
That's how much of an impact it had.
Transformers.
Please don't fuck my wife. I remember.
RC, I'm sorry. I'll stop sending you those pictures. I'm sorry, RC.
I think it's fun. I mean, it's a fun movie. It's very Transformers does a very summer blockbuster, like, popcorn vibe.
Great vibes movie. And then we have a whole bunch coming up, right?
We do Extraction, The Flash. That'll be next week. And we'll probably break up when we do Asteroid City. It's three in one shows a lot. But we have a lot of interviews too. But we will review those three movies next week.
Asteroid City sounds like a band, doesn't it?
I'm going away this weekend with my family. For my grandmother's 90th birthday.
You're going to Asteroid City?
I am. We're going to Asteroid City. I'm going to Florida, and I am going to see these movies this weekend. And I can definitely get someone to go see The Flash with me. Extraction will be easy. I don't know if I can get anyone to go see it. Like,
that's a tough sell.
That would have.
One of our coworkers is going to see Asteroid City with me. Gia, she was like, I was like, which one of these?
Gia has a very Wes Anderson vibe to her.
She goes, Asteroid City. I was like, ugh.
I'm very, very excited for The Flash. I'm going to remind you had a bleep out earlier when I kind of spoiled some of the cameos because we've had them spoiled for us. But I am very there is a cameo in The Flash that is teased as so heinously gross to see on screen that it's like upsetting.
That's right.
Okay, I think I know which one you're
that people Diana. Are like, this is really not OK.
You know, I lost weight eating turkey subs.
Oh, no. That was a funny line about I'm rewatching The Good Place.
Yeah.
And there's a good joke with, I forget her name. She voiced Sabine.
Sabine Wren?
Yeah, on Rebels. It's like Tia something or other. Mm-hmm. Fuck, I forget her name. Anyway, she's joking with Ted Danson's character. She's trying to take over or whatever. And he's like, you know, if we do a good job, maybe you could get the Jared from Subway account, the Jared Fogle account or something like that.
Did you guys see that video I sent you from with Jared Fogle recently? I think you responded to it, right?
Yeah, I saw it. What was it though?
It was like VH1's like best of the 2000s, like 2005. And it was like them rehashing, like these comedians rehashing what To Catch a Predator was. And they're like, yeah, it's a show where they catch these fucking sexual predators, blah, blah, blah. And the very end of it, it's Jared Fogle, was not arrested at the time, being like, yeah, they just keep falling for it. It's so crazy. I don't know why all these guys, they don't seem to understand. They're on Catch a Predator. It's really funny.
Tia Sakaar, that's her name.
Mm.
She was in The Internship, funny enough.
There's a lot of people in The Internship. It's weird.
Yeah.
Wait, is that, which one's the Internship's the one with Vince Vaughn. Intern is Robert De Niro, right?
Yeah.
Bob I watched P. that in a theater in the Poconos that smelled like catfish.
Oh.
Fucking gross.
Oh, that sounds horrible.
It was really bad.
Can't be better than that fucking Regal that Gooch took us to.
Oh my god, you fucking lose.
Have you switched? Are you officially an AMC guy now?
I've switched. The concessions did it in.
It really, yeah. You, again, you looking at us and being like, hey, that line's gonna take a long time. I was like, all right. It was like a fucking it was like a Tim Robinson sketch.
Yeah.
That sketch. It just felt like
you guys. The lady in front of me was like,
I have moved, by the way. My favorite I think you should leave season 3 skit is Club Aqua.
Club Aqua. Well, Tim Heidecker, yeah.
Yeah.
It does get funnier.
I'm masturbating. No, you're not. I'm in line. I saw you. Come get me.
The white, where he's like, you can't bring the wife. He's like, I'll see you at home. Like, I touch everything, see if it's real.
You know, I'd like to go to Club Halloween more than Club Aqua.
I built the deck at Club Aqua.
So funny.
Club Aqua. The deck collapsed. Kim Kardashian's head fell off.
Oh, yeah. I said that, the egg, and then...
The eggs kills me, man. They made a real game out of
it. The driving crooner really...
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I'm going to fucking kill you.
What is that? What are you doing? It's a fucking broom!
I'll fucking kill you.
Oh, man. All right, so we have a big one. The Flash and Extraction 2 next week. including an interview with Sam Hargrave, director of Extraction 2. We will talk to you then.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.